Hey, how you doing? Welcome back to the Football Diary podcast once again. We're here talking about all things Premier League as usual, and once again, as usual, joined by both Miles and Dave today. How are you doing, guys? Are you doing good?
Good, yeah. Yourself?
Glad to hear it. Yeah, not too bad. I feel like the kind of running order picks itself at the minute, doesn't it? With the only real talking points being top four and the relegation battle. So that's where we're going to zoom in on today, if that's okay with you guys. So speaking of top four, I think the first performance I'll probably draw your attention to and get your take on is Spurs losing to Wolves. Now, I always had Spurs as a team, I don't know about you, that was kind of probably the most resurgent one under Antonio Conte. Potentially the most, I don't know, informed to go for top four a few weeks ago. That's kind of changed a bit now. They've lost three on the bounce. Wolves have kind of come back into the picture as well in terms of the top four race. So start with you, Miles. How did you see Spurs' performance and can they turn it around and kind of continue some kind of form that they did have at the start of Conte's reign?
Spurs are such an interesting team at this point. I don't really know how to define them because you're used to the picture, but they don't really have the quality that they had for the last few years. Under the Pochettino reign, when they kind of were a staple of the top four and they were reaching the Champions League final and looking like they were really cementing themselves as one of the top clubs in the country, there was a lot that you could look at in that squad as top quality Premier League players. Whereas right now, it just looks like they lack that massively. Defensively, they were shocking. And you can't really be too surprised at that. They failed to adequately replace Vertonghen and Alderweireld. They brought in Christian Romero, who I do think is a good centre-back, but hasn't had time or the opportunity to settle, perhaps. Davinson Sanchez looks a mess, and they look like they missed Eric Dier. And that's not really who Spurs should be relying on if they're pushing for the Champions League. So I just think they just lack a lot of quality. And as good as Conte is as a manager, he probably has two top quality players in Harry Kane and Son. And then short of that, should they be in the top four? I don't think that squad is a top four squad, to be honest. Midfield's weak and the defence is poor, and it showed against Wolves.
You say they're top quality players. I'm listing a few that I saw in the Wolves game that I just thought, your time is finished at the club, basically. So Højbjerg, I thought, was awful. Just really mediocre. Misplaced passes. Lloris looked shaky at times. Some of the goalkeeping and defending and the communication between the two was awful. At wing-back, they've got problems. Sessegnon didn't look great, did he? Doherty didn't look great. Emerson Royale is an absolute car crash of a player. I don't know how he's managed to get to where he is. So, yeah, some mediocre players. And I think getting Bentancur into the team as quickly as possible and Kulusevski, albeit temporarily, is kind of paramount, really, for Spurs, isn't it? But did you see anything from Wolves, Miles, that made you kind of think, do you know what, there's a chance for them there?
Wolves are a really interesting side because they started the season quite slowly, it seemed, but they're just going about their business in a very pragmatic way. They're not glorious to watch. They don't thrill with a lot of goals, but they're so tight at the back and so organised. And Bruno Lage has done a really good job of taking on that mantle and really running with what Wolves had started to build under Nuno. They quietly have crept up into that conversation for the top four now. I think they're what? They overtook Tottenham with this win. And it was nice to see a few things, really. It was nice to see Jimenez's goal because I thought it was a really good instinctive striker's finish. And since he's come back from his injury, it's been hard to see too much of that from him. I think they've got a few players that will really impress in those areas, but they're just lacking depth in attacking positions. Obviously, they've let Traore go now. They've had long-term injuries with Pedro Neto. I do think if Wolves can invest well in the summer, then they're in a really good, stable place. They've only conceded 17 goals this season. Wow. And when we talk about Leicester in a bit, who've conceded 14 from set pieces alone, that shows you what Wolves' ambition is and how well-organised they are as a side. So I do think that they're probably putting themselves into a conversation of a European place, potentially not the top four, because I think there are other sides with more quality, but they're doing a very good job this season. And they showed it again in this game because they just looked a lot more organised than Tottenham did. And an Antonio Conte side isn't used to being outplayed like that, I don't think.
No. Do you think, Dave, that maybe Conte's bitten off more than he can chew with this particular job? Because we've always said the whole of this season, no matter who's in charge, Spurs is a difficult team to turn around, isn't it? That's still the case, clearly, but is Conte the right man and what does he need to do to kind of get them performing again?
I mean, he said in as many words that, you know, this team isn't good enough And it, you know, it's one of his biggest challenges, really, coming in and getting Tottenham back to where they were, obviously, in the past. And we've seen it, you know, obviously, he didn't get a couple of signings in. He obviously addressed the full-back areas. He obviously wanted Adama Traore, apparently, as a right wing back, which obviously they didn't manage to get over the line. So it seems as though he's addressed a lot of the areas that, you know, this what needs to be improved on. And, you know, as we've just mentioned, the defence is a big concern for me. And obviously you saw it in the game, not just the defence, but Lloris, we've seen the good and the bad. He made a few good saves. You know, Wolves could have been out of sight, really. Majority of the chances, majority of the best chances came for them. Jimenez could have had another couple of goals. So it's a worry for them, because obviously, as we've mentioned, they look to be the favourite, really, for that top four position. But all, saying that, I think they've kind of deceived a little bit.
Definitely.
Their games, they've got through probably a couple of games a little bit lucky, luckily, not to kind of drop points, and they've managed to get through and obviously grab the 3 points. So whether they were obviously a true favourite for that top four, it might just be a case of the best of a worst bunch at the minute, what we're looking at. Because Wolverhampton, you know, they were really unfortunate not to get a result against Arsenal, even when they, you know, it was 11v11. They were having chances and should have probably at least been on level terms before they went. And then they had so many chances just to put the ball in the net. So all credit to the manager there. It's not just, obviously, I don't think it's just in terms of the progress of their team. It's been a steady improvement as the season's progressed. And I think they've been more dominant in their attacking play as well, which I'm sure the fans are happy with, because under Nuno, it seemed to be sort of, there seemed to be a bit of a, you know, a stagnation in terms of where they were going. It seemed like that was as far as they could get under Nuno. And, you know, obviously the change that's been made, it looks to be a very cute decision.
Yeah, I think one thing I've always thought about Wolves is they've got quite a decent spine, a decent core of pretty decent players, haven't they? Mm-hmm. And their midfield's always been pretty well catered for, with Ruben Neves, who's quite sought after. Jao Moutinho still got a lot going for him. There's a lot of young players there as well that still haven't kind of fulfilled their potential. Ait Nouri, I thought, looked pretty good. Speaking of wing-backs, I think he's a real prospect as well. So I think they're just missing a bit of like stardust, aren't they, really? Jimenez was fantastic, like you say. He took his goal really well. But just a bit of like true quality up front, and they're surely not far away, are they?
They've tried it a few times, haven't they? Because they obviously brought in Patrick Cotrone a couple of seasons ago when it looked like he was going to become the next big thing, and that didn't really work. They brought in Fabio Silva, who is quite highly rated, but I still haven't really seen enough of him to see the potential there. And now, obviously, they've got Hwang in as well. So he's still injured at the moment, but they've made that signing permanent. So there's potential within that side. But I think Dave hit the nail on the head then. It's just Spurs have just, I think he's right, they've flagged to deceive. If you think back to the Leicester game when they sneaked that win with the two really late goals, that wasn't really a performance that necessarily had many admirers. Then they've lost 3 games in a row. They've got Man City next. And I don't think they had a particularly good transfer window. Traore didn't want to join them. He's taken a massive pay cut to go to Barcelona instead, who are a basket case. Now, all right, he's got connections to the club, but that seems nuts to me. They're getting non-league players turn them down because of personal terms can't be agreed. And then eventually they've panicked and gone to Juventus because they've got connections there in Paratici and Conte. And they've got 2 players that really... Juve probably didn't want to lose Bentancur, but probably had to because they've got so much going on in midfield right now because their transfer business has been appalling themselves. And bringing in Vlahovic, they needed to get rid of some players and needed to make some moves quickly. So Kulusevski's not really done enough at Juventus to make me think he's going to be a world beater in the Premier League either. I don't think Tottenham are in as good a position as they should be at this stage. And they really looked in this game like they just didn't have any clue. And when Conte is coming out afterwards, you asked Dave, has Conte bitten off more than he can chew? He certainly thinks he has. He came out again and said, these players don't have a winning spirit, I think he said. They need to be on the pitch trying to kill for you. And you ain't getting that from any of these Spurs players. Even Kane, who you say has done that for years, he doesn't really look like that right now, does he? I think Spurs are very in need of a refresh and move that side, to be honest.
Well, I think at the minute, we're talking about top four potentials. You've already said, I think, they're kind of overperforming for the team they've got and for their lack of form. At the start of the season, for somehow, they were top of the league, weren't they, with Nuno? And we were scratching our heads going, how the hell is this possible? They fluked top of the league, and then all of a sudden it caught up with them, and Nuno gets the sack. And I feel like that's been a little bit similar to the start of Conte's reign to now. It's almost like their actual quality is catching up with them. They're not as good as he's made them look initially. So yeah, loads to do. But I think top four is a lot about momentum at the minute, isn't it? Who's got the most desire, the most best run of results? And I don't think you can look further than probably sort of West Ham for kind of desire. It feels like they're kind of digging out results out of nowhere sometimes when they don't really deserve to win, but they've got kind of the desire to be there that Spurs don't seem to have. So if you're going to ask me about top four potentials, I'll probably say West Ham, which I'll probably speak about next. Disagree with me if you like, but where do West Ham sit in the top four question?
It's so hard to answer that with a team like West Ham because there's so many variables with the rest of their season. They still have European football. They've got a smaller squad of good, genuine quality at that level than most of the teams around them. But like Dave said about it being the best of a bad bunch, the teams that are chasing the top four at the moment, they all just seem in disarray. With the exception of Arsenal, but even they've only scored, one goal this calendar year. It's no one seems to want it for some reason. West Ham do, but I wonder whether they're going to get caught quite comfortably. And that's when Wolves maybe have a position to sneak in there. Or United might stumble their way in somehow because they certainly don't deserve it off recent form. I don't know with West Ham. They got a good point against Leicester, but I don't think Leicester have been a particularly entertaining side this season. They look an absolute shambles and they've got a lot of problems themselves. Mm. It's not an admirable league table this season, to be honest. The most interesting things are who's going to stay up and just how many points are Man City and Liverpool going to be far away from the rest of the league come the end of the season.
Yeah, okay. You're trying to make it sound a bit more of an entertaining spectacle than you've just done. But I will go to Dave then for potential West Ham top four credentials because, I mean, they played an out of sorts Leicester team, it's fair to say. We talked about them recently, didn't we? Saying they've got a lot of problems, especially in defence. A lot of players who are at a crossroads. They don't know if they want to be there. But they actually pulled out a fairly decent performance against West Ham for the most part. I thought Tielemans was back on his best. Why he was taken off with a couple of minutes to go, I have no idea. And Vestergaard put on in his place. That's just typical Brendan Rodgers at the minute. But West Ham dug out a result. They didn't play particularly brilliantly, but they clearly wanted to get something from this game. Dave, West Ham for the top four, what are you saying?
Obviously it was quite an entertaining game, quite end-to-end at times. But, I mean, I was quite surprised by Leicester's performance. I thought the way they've been of late, you know, it's been a bit travesty, really, and an embarrassment for Brendan Rodgers and some of the performances they've turned in have been abysmal, really. And I'm sure he'll be encouraged by the performance because, for me, I think they deserve 3 points. I don't feel West Ham really deserve the draw on the balance of play. There was a bit of controversy over the equaliser as well. We've seen them give him handballs. It's one of those that probably, if it gets given as a handball, it probably doesn't get overturned by VAR and vice versa.
Well, what's your take on that anyway? Because the rule is it has to come above the part where the shirt is for it to be not handball. Anywhere below the shirt line is a handball. That seemed to be like on the line, didn't it?
I mean, you know, marginal, but come on. We can't really discuss this decision because some of the terrible decisions we've seen this year. You know,
just start wearing long sleeves. That solves that problem, doesn't it?
It does. A little bit more, doesn't it?
And again, it's so borderline, this rule that they've brought in, you know, on the T-shirt. It's going to be one of those that's, you know, discussed to death over, you know, the next few years. And, you know, for however long it lasts, because it seems they bring new rules in, decide they're no good. Like, obviously, the handball rule last year when Lindelof conceded that ridiculous penalty on the first day of the season, and they decided to change the rule to two or three games. So, again, it's nobody really knows kind of where they're at in terms of these.
But that's just them trying to add another concrete decision instead of something that's subjective, isn't it? So it's another way that VAR can get some lines out and take 3 minutes to assess, all right, has it hit his T-shirt? That's the only reason they're doing it, to try and take accountability away, because all of a sudden now the referee doesn't have to make a judgment call on it. It's something that you can actually analyse. It's the same with a bit like in the, we'll come to it, I'm sure, but in the Villa-Newcastle game, where they were trying to decide whether it was a penalty or a free kick when Trippier took it. Well, it didn't matter in the end. But if his toe is on the line, is it in the box? Well, all of these things in football come down to these ridiculous measurements that until we had technology, you never would have been able to use. And it does just detract from the game itself. To be honest, I want it as a goal. I don't want rules that are going to come in and take away goals. That's the bit we all like about football, isn't it? We want it to be entertained. And I know you obviously have soft spots for Leicester, the two of you, but as a neutral, a last minute or a late goal to equalise for West Ham charge of the top four, I don't want to see that taken off because it was a millimetre below his sleeve line. It's silly. You're not controlling the ball. That's not handball, is it? It's his shoulder.
It is, but I think regardless of T-shirt lines, etc., if the ball hadn't hit that part of his arm, would it have gone in? No, definitely not. He was heading it down to the ground. So, you know, the arm actually changed the trajectory of the ball. So for me, that's influence in play.
I think it's one of those where it just needs to be, it's either handball or it's not, you know. And I think they've made it too complicated again by saying, bringing this T-shirt line business. Because at the end of the day, if it hits you on the arm there and it goes in the goal, you've clearly gained an advantage by technically scoring via what's technically a handball. You know,
it's not humble. You can't extend your shoulder out to reach out for something. Even if I move my arm out, my shoulder doesn't go anywhere. It's still here. So he's not actually got bigger from it or anything. That's just his body. He's not gesturing towards it and pushing out towards it. It's not humble. It's his shoulder. That's the argument, isn't it?
They didn't hit him there, though, did it? It's in there. That's
his
shoulder.
It's a T-shirt.
If it scores with the shoulder, then I won't have any arguments. But if it hits you on the arm and goes in goal, I'm sure if you were a Villa, if you're a fan, if that happened against Villa, you'd feel aggrieved by having that goal. I would if I was a United fan.
That's because I'm fickle. But because I'm a neutral, this is the only time where I actually can analyse it and say, no, I think that should probably stand. Because your T-shirt line doesn't come past that far down your arm where you're going to control the ball with it. If you could start manipulating your arm in that way, Dave, fair play to you. But to me, that's not humble.
Well, that's the thing. We're arguing about it now. The guys in Stockley Park are there looking at the VAR replays over and over and going, I don't know, is it? Could it be? That's the problem, isn't it, really? Somebody's point of view, but just somewhere else looking at a monitor. It's never
so they've done the right thing then by allowing the goal and just saying, well, we'll stick with the ref's decision then. We won't change it. It's not clear and obvious, clearly. And they talked about that so much, clear and obvious, and it doesn't seem to actually matter because apparently clear and obvious means nothing. But in this case, it did, thankfully. I think it's fine, isn't it?
Well, Leicester will feel like rightly aggrieved, I think, because I think if that was your team, it's kind of 50-50, isn't it? They'll just want the season to be over now as it is, won't they? Because they've kind of got nothing to play for, I don't think, apart from just trying not to finish on a low. But as for West Ham, that point does still keep them looking at the top four, doesn't it? I mean, you two don't seem to be convinced. If Rice was injured, for example, is that season over for them?
Yeah, or Bowen at the moment. Yeah. Just quickly on Leicester, though, and that decision, I don't think they can feel aggrieved because it was another corner that they've conceded from. Like, it doesn't matter what happens, to be honest. He could have used any part of his body he was going to score because Leicester and their set pieces, I don't know what it is with them. It must be so infuriating for Brendan Rodgers, because how many different tactics? What can you do at this point to get that team to sort it out? Like I said, they've conceded 14 goals from set pieces, not including penalties this year. Wolves have conceded 17 altogether. Yeah. That's as many goals as Man City have conceded all season. So if you're genuinely having ambitions for Europe, which I think Leicester would have said at the start of the season that they do, They finished fifth last season and the season before. What are they doing with that? It's appalling how bad they are defensively.
What I'm saying is, Manos, is when United next play Leicester, we're going to score from corner.
No, not a chance. that'd be the confidence boost that Leicester need at the back and how to defend set pieces. But with West, I feel like, Mike, you're waiting for us to go, yeah, come on, West Ham can get top four to keep it exciting.
And I'm just playing devil's advocate, mate, that's all.
They definitely can, because the quality of some of those players is shining through. Jared Bowen looks absolutely fantastic. Declan Rice, there might not be a better midfielder than him in the league right now. I think he's been absolutely fantastic this season. But you're right. An injury to one of those two and all of a sudden that's dangerous. And I wonder how much they'll fancy their chances in the Europa League, to be honest.
How much longer can those two keep pulling them through?
Yeah, because their results haven't been necessarily the most amazing. If you look at a lot of the results they've got, it's against teams that you'd expect them to beat. And I think they are just benefiting from the fact that United, Tottenham, Arsenal to an extent, are pretty woeful at the moment.
It doesn't feel like they're scoring as many goals as they were as well.
Bowen is, but the rest of them aren't. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, I think that brings me nicely onto the next kind of contenders for top four in United. So Manchester United, once again, take the lead, convincing first half, really unconvincing second half, really sort of slapdash approach to the goal being conceded. I mean, how do you analyse United at the minute, Dave? Can you even begin to sort of look at them as top four contenders? Or are they writing off the season now and waiting for it to finish like Leicester are?
Players might be writing it off. They seem to be having a lot written in the media.
It's nuts.
It's a lot of leaks going on, isn't there?
Yeah, it's not nice, man. It's not nice. Mm. And it's come out with Henderson again now as well, hasn't it? He's in... Mm. Having to put out statements and things, it's ugly at the moment.
Well, you can say about United, they've tightened up at the back, albeit Harry Maguire's coming in for a lot of criticism still for the mistakes he's making, but they're not conceding as many. They're scoring slightly more than they were, I think, before Solskjaer got sacked, but that's not saying much either. But so many wasted chances. The amount of chances United are creating, what the hell is missing for them?
You could argue that all of our attacking players are out of form, apart from Jadon Sancho, who's playing the best football, that we've seen him play for Man United so far. In terms of, obviously, Ronaldo's on a 6-game scoreless streak. Rashford looks as bad as ever. He's not looked right for a long while. He scored a couple of goals, obviously, when he came on as a substitute in those couple of games, but against tired legs. But his just general play is not convinced me at all. No. And we talk about, obviously, the consistency in the play and being able to play at a high standard for 90 minutes. And I mean, we weren't even able to do that under Solskjaer. We weren't even able to do that for 45 minutes under Solskjaer towards the end. We looked, our sorts and... Under Rangnick, you can see the sort of principles that he's, brought in and the ways he's trying to play. I think some things have been encouraging. I just think a lot of players are flattering to deceive, and whether they are capable of being able to play in this style, begs the question if they're good enough for the full stop, really.
They just don't look like a team right now, though, do they? In so many areas. I think one of the things is, all right, they're creating these chances, but they're lacking that clinical edge. That's just not a mentality you'd expect from Man United, particularly with someone like Ronaldo up front.
No.
And everything that's going on behind the scenes, the amount of players that are speaking out against Rangnick while he's in post, and obviously there's been various issues. It just seems like there's been impact on the mentality of the players. I do wonder as well, just to kind of have some sympathy for the players that are featuring at the moment. I wonder what the impact of the Greenwood situation has had on them as individuals, because this is someone that they go to work with every day. And I imagine some of them are quite close with him. So someone like Rashford, who is dealing with the fact that Lingard is coming out complaining, Martial has been around for a long time coming out complaining, then this with Greenwood. His manager's changing every 5 seconds. I understand why mentally he's probably not really understanding things that well. Whereas someone like Sancho, who hasn't been there as long, might be able to flourish in that kind of environment because it's a new setting for him. That's complete speculation, but you can understand why the mentality looks like it's suffering right now, because there's a lot going on at the club. They've just let Solskjaer go, who's a legend to the club, and I'm sure had his admirers even within the playing staff. Ranić's asking him to do things that they've not had to do before, and they seemed unsettled by it, and arguing with some of the players in the process. Mm. And then the media are picking up on these other things as well. And they're really, really difficult things to deal with as on an individual basis. It's a funny time for United, but again, another club that are stumbling into a decent position. If they win tonight, they go fourth, because other teams around them are also faltering. So they're still in the conversation somehow.
Which is incredible, really, isn't it? It kind of, every game that passes, it makes me wonder about the wisdom of having an interim manager, because it does feel like this is temporary. And even if and when Ranić does step upstairs to a sort of more senior director sort of role, is he expecting this blueprint to carry on with the next coach? Mm. Is he looking for a coach to have that same approach? Or, I mean, it's very difficult to kind of gauge, isn't it?
Who, by the way, again, the talk is it's going to be Brendan Rodgers, who is leading Leicester to the worst season he's had with them at the moment. Mm. I think that would be a very, very odd appointment.
No, I don't think so. I'm sure they've got somebody in mind. I'm being optimistic here. This is the United board after all, but I'd like to think they've already got somebody they're talking to behind the scenes that will fit the mold that Ranić's kind of started doing. Wishful thinking, I know, but I imagine Dave disagrees with that.
Who knows? Who knows with this club? You'd hope. I mean, the fans, from what I've looked at, aren't keen on Pochettino.
No.
And it seems a lot of fans are calling for Ten Hag, and part of me kind of agrees with that that opinion, just because of the potential upside of that decision. And we've seen the potential of, you know, as a manager, we've seen that he can do it in Europe. And I mean, what are we potentially losing out on if we don't take Pochettino in and we gamble on Ten Hag? Because we need to, I feel like it's just too good an opportunity to turn down. That's if he wants to go to Man United.
Yeah.
So, I just don't see what we can lose out if it doesn't work out. We take Ten Hag, it doesn't work out. We're in a mess as it is anyway. So we're not, at the end of the day, I feel like it's a free hit.
Yeah, well, potentially.
Southampton are hitting some pretty good form, and Ranić obviously has a friend there.
I thought that. Yeah, they had a bit of a chat beforehand, and they're kind of, he's a mentor to a lot of managers, but I think Hasenhüttl's one of the ones that's really looked up to Ranić and his approach, isn't he? And he even said in the comments, after the game what United weren't doing to fit the system, which I thought was scathing, you know, coming from Hasenhüttl, who's was smashed 9-0 in the same fixture last season. So yeah, it's a weird one when that comes out of someone like him. But yeah, he's a good coach. But I mean, for me, I can honestly see Ranić taking the role himself on a semi-permanent basis come the summer. I really can, because I mean, it feels like he's making all these changes to the system, and the only way for that to continue is for him to stay at the helm.
He should not do that. I don't think he's good enough.
Okay. Well, moving on anyway from our regular United chat, otherwise this could go on and on. We'll talk about the bottom half of the table now, the bottom four specifically, because Newcastle have now come out of the bottom three, still in the conversation. There are teams around Newcastle.
I don't know what this is.
You know where I'm going with this. There are teams around Newcastle above them in the relegation zone. Newcastle seem to have the form at the moment. That's three wins on the bounce under Eddie Howe recently. Their signings seem to be coming to fruition, although albeit Chris Wood seems to be trying really hard to score and not getting close. Mm. So Newcastle beat Villa 1-0. Does that mean you put Newcastle up there as favourites to pull themselves out of it? They've spent an absolute fortune, so you'd imagine so. Mm. How do you see the relegation race going now, Miles, with the way things are going? It's difficult to tell because none of the games are equal, but what's your take?
I think Newcastle didn't necessarily look like the most overwhelming side, but what they did look was organised, and that's something that they've lacked for a while. Even when they had Steve Bruce, who was quite a defensive coach, they looked poor defensively, whereas in this game, they were really strong. Villa didn't offer much, to be honest. They didn't really need to defend that well, but when they did, Dan Burn looked fantastic. I thought it was a great debut for him. And Kieran Trippier, obviously, he's a wonderful professional, and it's been said limitless times and will continue to be said that he brings so much to the club just by being there as a presence with his experience with England, at Atletico Madrid, and even with Tottenham as well. That's something that Newcastle really needed, that bit of quality and that bit of understanding and maturity, I think. And he's obviously been a great success already, and now it looks like he might be out for a short period of time with a broken bone in his foot. They lost both fullbacks in this game as well, Newcastle, and couldn't play Matt Target because he was on loan, but they still looked defensively organised. And I think that's, and I think Lascelles pulled out quite late on in the game preparation as well with an illness. So I think they're doing the right things, and they're trying to build that solid foundation. We've still not seen Bruno Guimarães yet properly. We've seen a couple of minutes from him, but I think that will be a brilliant addition to their side as well. A player that I'm really excited for, to be honest. I'm glad he's in the Premier League, even if it is at Newcastle. And Chris Woods will do something for them in this season. And even if he doesn't, he's only there as cover until Wilson comes back in anyway. But no, Newcastle definitely have the potential to get out of it. They're all of a sudden only a point behind Everton, 2 points behind Leeds. They're out of the bottom three. I can't see them falling back into it now because they probably do have more quality than the rest of the sides around them. And like you say, that momentum. But it was pretty easy for them to build momentum against Villa on Saturday. It was a shocking game.
Well, while we're on Villa, what did you see that disappointed you? Because Gerrard looked really deflated after the game, didn't he? And rightly so. But what was different about this performance?
Oh, they were just wasteful. Honestly, they had a lot of possession at times. They could have controlled the pace of it, but they didn't. Coutinho didn't get on the ball, so he barely was able to create anything. Watkins looked really isolated up front. We wasted every opportunity we got from the set piece. They had Douglas Luiz on free kicks and corners, and he overhit every single one. It was really disappointing. And obviously, the goal is so frustrating to concede. You give a free kick away that close to the goal. It's not ideal, but you often think, well, that's going over the wall and over the goal.
Well, what's Buendia doing there, though? Because Martinez couldn't see anything.
That's not on Buendia to me. That's on Martinez. Mings was furious. He shoved Buendia afterwards. But if you're arranging your defence and Martinez can't see, he needs to make that clear. And what do you expect Buendia to do in that moment? If someone's taking a shot at goal and you can get something in the way of it, you go towards the ball. You'd be scathing at him if he jumped out of the way of it and Martinez didn't see it in that way. It was unfortunate. But the offside goal was... It's another one where it's millimetres that we've got to start thinking about. The thing that, I know it's silly. I was talking to someone at work about this the other day. Look, we know what the offside rule is, and I know why it is there. But has Ollie Watkins gained an advantage there? Not at all. His toenail's offside. If you look at the lines that are drawn, the back of the defender's foot is over the line. So it's not even drawn from the same, you're not using the same perspective and the same scale. And this is a ball that deflected up into the air, looped up for ages, and then fell to Watkins. So he had no advantage. He wasn't stood 30 yards up the pitch. It was one of them.
Well, let me just add to that, Miles, though. I mean, as a neutral watching that, I want to see that goal chalked off, you know?
You never want to see goals chalked off. You want to see him given. If that had gone in, then obviously that changes the tide of the game and maybe Villa build a bit of momentum because obviously Newcastle had already lost a couple of players to injury at that point. They had a break in the middle of the second half as well. There was an incident in the stands and that really helped Newcastle. Villa looked like they started to build a bit of attacking threat and Newcastle just got themselves reorganised at that point, put 10 men behind the ball and defended well in a good shape. And Dan Byrne just won everything that came into the box. So, yeah, frustrating from Villa. They didn't really seem to have a plan in this game. And once they couldn't get Coutinho on the ball, they didn't even really try to. And he took Buendia off way too early, it seemed. Who actually did look a bit bright. It was really underwhelming. And the last couple of games have worried me a little bit, I'll be honest.
Well, on Newcastle, I think you've got to credit their energy levels, their maturity. And I think you talk about the influence of players like Trippier coming into the side, you know, with this winning mentality. You can just see, can't you, the difference. He elevates the players around him. And with the defence completely changed almost from what it was before Eddie Howe's arrival, they needed that, didn't they? They really did. I kind of thought they'd have a bit of a wobble with that many new recruits so soon after one another. But they couldn't have been much worse than they were during Steve Bruce's reign, could they, defensively? So, yeah, massive change. It almost feels like the Steve Bruce era was a year ago or more, doesn't it? It's that much has happened since he was in charge.
He started another one now, hasn't he, with West Brom, and his star player is Andy Carroll. It's just how Steve Bruce can you get? I just think that's hilarious.
The Steve Bruce tour of all the West Midlands rivals. He's got no loyalty whatsoever, has he?
I wouldn't be loyal to any of the clubs I've been at in the West Midlands if I was Steve Bruce. He treated appallingly. But it's hilarious that there's a club taking on. West Brom fans are in for a right treat.
That's one word for it. Dave, relegation battle then. So obviously Newcastle look like they are putting together some kind of run of form. We've had a bit of a green shoot from Norwich, but they don't look like they're going to come good on their little run of form that they put together. Burnley are an unknown quantity though, aren't they? They've got so many games in hand still. They're drawing a lot of them. They play Liverpool and lost 1-0 rather to a Fabinho goal, another Fabinho goal. But they played okay. They did all right. They just got no quality really, have they, in the key areas. They made a lot of chances and just didn't take them. Are Burnley ever going to sort of get themselves out of this? Because I'm of the opinion now that games in hand to a team like Burnley are a negative thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a question of whether the quality that they've brought in is going to be enough to keep them up, isn't it? And that remains to be seen. We've seen Weghorst play really well against Man United. We've been very generous to a lot of the relegation candidates, United, as always. But on a serious note, it's going to be a question of whether their additions to their team are going to be enough to keep them up. And I mean, we talk about the games in hand, but I'd rather have the points on the board, because all of a sudden, you know, Burnley are kind of playing catch up to those that are above. You know, let's be honest, that the teams that are above them aren't too far away. But you're looking at a rejuvenated Newcastle team who are creeping away from the relegation zone. Obviously they've just lost Trippier to a metatarsal, so he could potentially be out for the rest of the season. I feel as though Newcastle might just have enough to stay up. And obviously with the likes of Norwich, and obviously got Watford, Leeds could be pulled back into it. They've been a bit shaky of late. A couple of strange games. It just seems to be their midfield, really, which they struggle to kind of control games. And, you know, we've seen it. They've come back in the Premier League. A bit of a yo-yo team in terms of how a game tends to flow. I think it's going to be a tough one. I still feel as though Norwich will probably go down. I don't think as good as a manager as Dean Smith has. And he's, you know, they've got a lot of positives as a team since he's come in. And he seems to have found a bit more of a balance to their team, and they've not looked as vulnerable at the back. It's just whether they're going to have enough to kind of, if they can take it late and deep into the season and have a chance, you know, with two or three games to go, I'm sure they'll probably be happy with that. But I feel as though it will be Norwich, Burnley, and the third place is going to be very tight, I feel. But I feel as those two will probably be out of the running,
I think Watford. I think Watford have decided as well. They're poorer, I think, than Norwich are at the minute. I think Burnley are doing okay. They could, if they take their chances, they could pull close to getting out of it. But I honestly think that bottom three is set in stone now.
Do you? I do wonder. Yeah. Do you know what? Burnley are the funny one to me, because, like you say, because we've not actually seen a lot of Burnley this season, it's really hard to judge what they're like. And then the last few games, they have actually played quite well. They just had really tough fixtures. But they could have won against Liverpool, had Weghorst put a couple of those chances away. And he is a very good player, I think. I think he had an off day that day, but I think he's a good striker. So that could pick him back up. Watford, to me, I think are the most certain out of those three. I just think they've got no quality. They looked awful against Brighton, I thought. They're boring. They haven't got anything about them. And bizarre that Hodgson's taken that job in the first place. I think they're down. Norwich probably will go down. It's a shame. I would like to see Dean Smith keep them up. And they look a lot better under his stewardship already. I will say, they won at the weekend. But Everton have got a really, really hard run of fixtures and could find themselves in a lot more trouble than people anticipate. So if Burnley keep up this form and use their game in hand wisely, you could see Everton get sucked into it quite easily, because Newcastle look like they're going to come out of it. Burnley are looking a bit better. Norwich are trying something. We don't know what Frank Lampard's going to do there yet. Good win at the weekend, but still that same side. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Well, Brentford have played 25 games. I think they've played the most out of those teams in that cluster. So they could be caught up quite easily. True. But there's so many hypothetical if that first team wins that game and if that team wins that game. It's that lack of parity with the games that's making it such a difficult one to call, isn't it, really?
On Brentford, did you see that they played a behind-closed-doors friendly yesterday and Christian Eriksen played 60 minutes?
Yeah, well, good to see.
He what, sorry?
I think he scored.
He got an assist, I think. Got an assist.
It was against Southend, wasn't it?
I'm not sure who it was against. But yeah, he played 60 minutes and I think he got an assist. It's the first time he's played, obviously. So that's wicked news. Can't wait to see him play again.
Yeah, that'd be really good to see. I mean, that could make a really
lining him up for Spurs as well. Conte was like, well, if he can show that he's fit at Brentford, yeah, I'd love to have him here. Brilliant.
I mean, that's amazingly disrespectful to Brentford, to be honest, at these stages of his joy, mate. So yeah, relegation, I think we're kind of almost in agreement on that. I think Everton are an interesting one because we said when Lampard got appointed and when the transfer window had finished, there's so many uncertainties about Everton, aren't there, at the moment. They've got a couple of players with a lot to prove in Dele Alli and Donny van de Beek, who actually look pretty good in the game against Leeds. But Frank Lampard is an unknown still. I don't know what a Lampard team really looks like. We've not seen enough of him at Derby or at Chelsea to kind of have a clean run at his tactical approach, whatever that may be. So he's got his hands full with Everton, I think. If he stays there beyond this time next year, I'll be surprised. You know, 12 to 18 months, I think, is kind of his limit, I think. Everton's limit for patience as well. If he doesn't start making them into sort of an established top 10, top 8 team, they're going to struggle next season, I think.
I think the thing that Lampard has in his favour is quite similar to Gerrard being at Villa, to be honest, that both of them are pretty well loved by the media. So they'll get an easier ride of things. There won't be quite as much pressure on either of them, I think. Yeah. That will give him a bit of time to at least see out what he wants to do at Everton. But like you say, we've never really seen enough of Lampard to know what it is he tries to achieve. Although Gerrard, for example, is it's going to be that thing where those two are always going to get compared now that they're in the Premier League together. But although Gerrard's relatively inexperienced too, he had a clear system at Rangers and he's implemented that at Villa really quickly as well. Whereas Lampard kind of flirted with a few different things. And towards the back end of his time at Chelsea, he was just trying to throw as many attacking players on the pitch as possible. So I'll be interested to see if he can't do that at Everton, but he's going to have to pull some results out in some pretty tough fixtures, to be honest.
He's got a pretty mass rebuild on his hands as well. You know, if he gets to the end of the season, which I can imagine he will do. You never know with Everton. But in terms of next season, going into the summer, the amount of players and sort of players that have been thrown together through different transfer spells by different managers, it's going to be a big challenge and probably the biggest challenge alongside the Man United. You know, the new Man United manager is going to have that mess out, really. And so it'll be interesting to see how he does, because obviously we saw how he did. He got the players he wanted in at Chelsea and couldn't quite piece it together and make it work. You know, for sure, he's got a big chance to kind of redeem himself.
Yeah. That's one thing that would concern me if I was an Everton fan. I saw him with a blank checkbook at Chelsea. Obviously, the first season, he couldn't do any business and he develops some young players really well. So the likes of Gordon, who are coming through at Everton right now, might really benefit from Lampard being there. But then you saw him with unlimited funds, basically, spending however much he did on Kai Havertz, Hakim Ziyech, and he couldn't really get that system to work. So they need a rebuild, is Lampard a rebuild kind of manager? And also, there's still a genuine possibility that they'll be rebuilding in the Championship. And that's, again, a completely different job all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, it is, because they're going to have to sell everyone and start from scratch because their wage bill is far too high for the Championship as well.
And the likes of Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are not going to take a year in the Championship at this stage in their career. No. Not a chance.
No. So bleak outlook for Everton then, is what we're saying. Still known, isn't it, really? So that will be everything for this week. We've got Champions League's return tonight, I think, isn't it? So
it is.
That's exciting. We can talk about that next time. There's a full programme of Premier League fixtures as well over the weekend. So, yeah, loads to look forward to and to chat about next time. Thank you for joining me again, both of you. Thank you again for watching and for listening. Please subscribe if you can. That'd be a massive help for us. But until then, yeah, we'll see you all next week. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.